Good evening, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NOVAM Radio Network. Oh, we just have way too much to deal with tonight. We're going to have some sound from one of the exit interviews that this lying son of a bitch George W. Bush is conducting with some really top-flight media whores like Charlie Gibson. We'll have some sound from that interview, parts of which were broadcast yesterday and today on ABC News, and the astonishing willingness on the part of Charles Gibson to not just give Bush a pass on the lies that come out of his mouth, but to depict himself, Charlie Gibson, as somebody in on the joke being on the American people. We'll get to that a little bit later. I don't know. I'm starting to get really dingy. Oh, wait a minute. I've been saying that all week. Oh, wait a minute. This is only Tuesday. What with all the change being affected in the new Barack Obama cabinet and appointments and all that change, coupled with the clear evidence that media are going to let this rancid bastard out of the White House, even now when he can't do anything to hurt them anymore, he can't pull their White House passes, they're still going to let him slide. And the incoming administration is going to let him slide. Okay? So any of you who, back before the election in 06, were counting on a Democratic majority so that the House Judiciary Committee could start impeachment hearings, and remember how you got a huge mackerel smacked across your face? Remember that? Huh? Well, guess what? Get ready. Here comes the mackerel again. There's not going to be any pursuit of George W. Bush. There really isn't. The only judgment of Bush's presidency will come from the historians. And you and I are not going to be around. I mean, face it. We're not going to be around when the historians finally determine that this rancid little bastard did all the horrible things that you and I know he did. We're not going to be here. We'll be dead. That's why. Come on. This is not going to happen for 50 or 60 years. Because I will guarantee you that there is no active taping system in the Bush White House. Never has been. Bush is a criminal, and so are his cohorts, but they're not dumbass criminals like the Nixon White House. More of those tapes are being released from the Nixon archives. And it just doesn't stop, does it? We really live in a house of mirrors, in a fun house, with not fun in the sense of, ooh, this is fun, in a scary house, a spook house, a house of mirrors, a crazy place. That's. But guess what? Our Canadian neighbors in the Great White North, they've had enough. And I've gotten a couple of emails over the past couple of days that Field Marshal Stephen Harper is going to be run out of office. Who is this? Wekusko? Interesting name. You Canadians have interesting names. Wekusko writes, I don't know if it's Miss or Mister. Y'all have got to at least put a name on the bottom. Don't make me try to decipher your screen name. Come on. All you have to do is write Harry or Marge or Bertha or Jack, just put a name on for me, okay? But this writer writes, hey, Mike, not sure if you know, but our flying monkey right government is going to get the punt only 6 weeks after getting a second minority government. The three opposition parties have agreed to defeat the conservatives on Monday. I guess they agreed to that today or yesterday and become a new coalition government. Suffice it to say, the conservatives are none too happy, so prepare for an all-out assault on Canadian democracy in the next week. Well, y'all stand firm. And what happened in, was it Thailand? Was it Thailand where the huge demonstrations occurred at the international airport in Bangkok? And tens of thousands of people sat down, refused to move. And today the government that stole the election resigned. I guess that's the story, right? Isn't that what happened? They've decided to admit to the fact that the election was a fraud. Remember back in 2000 and 2004 when some of the more wild-eyed radicals in liberal talk radio were suggesting we didn't need violence, we didn't need to go in the streets screaming and frothing at the mouth. All we had to do was sit down and don't move. But no, we chose not to do that. Where to begin? Where to begin? Well, I'll tell you where to begin. Right-wing talk radio. You know, I've said this a million times. I'm so sick of these wormy bastards in right-wing talk radio trying to convince their brain-dead audience and doing a good job of it and convincing other media, print and television, that there's no market for liberal talk. And that's the reason liberal talkers control about 10% of the radio market. That is a lie. It's always been a lie. It will continue to be a lie. The reason liberal talk is not available across the dial is simply because there is a concerted effort to keep it off the radio. If that were not the case, you see, the argument is, well, there's no mark. Nobody wants to hear it. I would remind a whole group of people, first of all, the right-wing talkers, how miserably these bastards failed. People like Hannity and Limbaugh, the usual crew. They exhorted their knuckle-dragging audience for the past 2 years. Oh, don't let the country slip back into Democratic hands! And what did the country do? The country gave the right-wing talkers the middle finger. When you get right down to it, these guys are pretty superfluous. They are an irritation. They, in addition to being scum and bastards and, you know, one the America haters and so on and so forth, but they really have become an irritation. The country rejected their message on November. When did we vote? November 5th? When was the last election? I don't know. November 4th? The country rejected what these rat bastards have been saying for the past 18 months, 2 years, warning about a Democratic takeover. Every single filthy tactic they tried to defeat Barack Obama failed. And not only that, but they failed. Their tactics failed in states that prior to the last election had been fairly crimson in color. Right? You know what I'm talking about. Let's start with, Virginia? Oh, that's a good one. So talk right-wing talk radio has crapped out. It is no longer relevant. Barack Obama won the last election by 7 or 8 percentage points, depending on who you want to believe. Bush said he had a mandate when he won with 1%, and even that margin was stolen. That was his so-called re-election. His first election, he won by one vote on the Supreme Court. But he claimed, if you remember that famous, I got reelected and that gave me political capital and I decided to spend the capital. If that's the case, and Barack Obama has permission from the electorate to do just about any goddamn thing he wants to do, anything, anything. Now, of course, that's not true, but nothing Bush ever said was true. So, right-wing talk radio threw everything that it had at Barack Obama and the Democrats, and what happened? America said enough. So, bottom line here, I would imagine that there's going to be just a flood of radio station general managers and program directors, the ones that still can speak for themselves and are not controlled by a network somewhere, and a flood of emails and inquiries from the networks into our general manager for this network, Art Mobley, asking Mr. Mobley, please, sir, may we have the Malloy program? Please, sir, may we have the Randy Rhodes program? Because America has spoken, and they don't want any more of this filthy, crappy, nasty right-wing talk radio.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Wrong. way he walks, and I love the way he talks.
It's like earning capital. I earned capital in the campaign, political capital, and now I intend to spend it. It is my style. That's what happened in after the 2000 election. I earned some capital. I've earned capital in this election, and I'm going to spend it.
What a sick, sick little son of a bitch, isn't he? Huh? You earned capital. Oh, by the way, the email from Canada was from Chris in Winnipeg. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, if y'all want me to, share your emails, and I try to as much as possible on this program, you know, just give me a name. I don't care if you make one up, all right? Okay. Now, as far as Thailand, it was the court in Thailand. Thailand's constitutional court, Reg writes in, dissolved the ruling People Power Party and two coalition partners. That forced the prime minister and dozens of leaders to step down. And the court order banned them from politics for 5 years. As Reg writes, obviously Scalia and Roberts are not in Thailand. I would imagine, though, that had tens of thousands of people not sat down in Thailand, as they did in a couple of other countries, when they felt the election was fraudulent, the fraudulent election would have stood, like it did in this country, twice. But we have more important things to do than to protect our form of... Wait a minute, what am I saying? Why do we want to protect corporate... All right, well, I don't know. Maybe it is time to, as Pat Buchanan likes to say, get the pitchforks and burning torches and storm the castle, huh? So anyway, I am hoping that NovaM's general manager and CEO, Art Mobley, who is in the Phoenix headquarters, will be swamped with requests for this program and Randy Rhodes' program, since now it is apparent that America has rejected right-wing talk radio. Huh? What do you think? You think it's going to happen? I would love, any time, any place, these scummy little bastards. You know, Tom Hartman, when he has gone head-to-head against Rush Limbaugh in various markets around the country, he beats Limbaugh's ass. Now, granted, Hartman is not on anywhere near the number of stations as Limbaugh. When Randy Rhodes went up against Rush Limbaugh down in Florida, she beat his ass. When I have been placed head-to-head with right-wingers, as in New York City, I beat their ass. Asses. So this nonsense that there's no market for liberal talk, I am so sick of that. That's like Bush insisting that Saddam Hussein threw out the weapons inspectors, and there was always that doubt as to whether or not Saddam had weapons, right? So we had to invade and get rid of him. I'm sick of the lies. I am so sick of the lies. Rather than go head-to-head in a radio format, I would frankly just like to, I don't know, beat the living hell out of them. That's all. I mean, just punch their lights out. Woo! There goes that Irish-Italian booger bear inside of me again. I'm tired of it. You know, how long can you be Mr. Nice Guy about this kind of stuff? Or Mr. Controlled Emotions? like I usually am. Okay. That was sort of a joke. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, sent this to me. It's from Stars and Stripes, a coalition of atheists and agnostics. Wants the Barack Obama White House to protect young military members from what is described as rampant religious discrimination in the U.S. military. Really? Are you kidding? There is religious discrimination in the military? You mean they don't like Muslims or Jews or agnostics or atheists? What? They just want fundamentalist Christians who will go die for Jesus? Yes, Mike. There is a group called the Secular Coalition for America, held a news conference yesterday urging that new rules against forcing soldiers to attend Christian religious services. They want new rules against proselytizing, where the chaplain gets some 19-year-old kid who's about ready to go get shot at. Well, you know, Jesus loves you, so I'll tell you what, Here, hold my hand. Now, I want you to make a commitment to your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and we'll all be together in heaven before you go out there and kill the godless Muslims, okay?
Okay.
You know, it's got to stop. So, the Secular Coalition for America is urging new rules against proselytizing and more training for chaplains on how to handle non-religious troops. Why should chaplains have to handle non-religious troops? Why don't the chaplains just handle religious troops? Why don't they have a cadre of secular humanists? I will volunteer! Give me a uniform! Give me a rank! I'll go to a battle zone. I will tell the young troops, don't buy into the lies. If you're out here fighting, you're not fighting for Jesus or your mother. You're fighting for corporate America or natural resources that don't belong to us. Now, if you're going to fight, go fight. But don't expect that if you take a bullet in the head and you die, that a bunch of angels are going to say, oh, hello, welcome home. Come this way. We're about to process you into heaven. More in a minute. Oh, God. This is going to be a rough night, Cabby.
Lord, we're not trying to act as well. Your brother's keeper just don't apply, 'cause it's everybody for himself. Jesus came in glory, and in glory he shall return. The preacher said, in God we trust, ye Democrats shall burn. No butterflies, no hanging chads can save them in the end. First Republican, thank God for life. It's bigger. It's bigger.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show. Only on Nova M Radio.
A Rational World.
Damn.
That's me. A little addendum to the conclusion of the sit-down strike in Thailand. As Prairie 2 writes, it was successful because the military there refused to obey the government's orders to crack down. If the people here in the U.S., who have taken an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution of the United States from all threats, foreign and domestic, if our people would have done or would do the same thing, we wouldn't be in this Bush mess to begin with, right? Anyway, military atheists want new rules on prayer. That's the headline from Stars and Stripes. And a group called the Secular Coalition for America held a news conference yesterday urging new rules against trying to force these young minds who have just been conditioned to kill without thinking for corporate America. That's how they've been conditioned. Now they want to take it one step further and have these young men and women now dedicate their lives to the baby Jesus, who apparently loves killing. Wayne Adkins, a former Army First Lieutenant who served in Iraq in 2004 and 2005, who is now with the Secular Coalition for America, said, quote, "When they say there are no atheists in foxholes, it's slanderous. To deny their existence is to deny that they serve," end quote. But you see, this is just like the gays in the military thing. Some of the greatest military strategists in the history of warfare, which is a rather dubious claim to fame, but some of the most brilliant military strategists were gay as your Uncle Mary. But they happen to be great military strategists, which is the whole idea, right? Hi, are you Alexander the Great?
I am.
What are you here for?
To conquer the world.
How's it going?
Damn near have it completed.
Are you queer?
Yes.
Oh, no!
But no problem, because so is my father, Philip of Macedonia.
And as far as atheists in foxholes,
in the first place, if we still had foxholes, can you imagine the scene? A firefight?
Here comes the enemy. Pick an enemy. I don't care. As long as they're Muslim, right? Doesn't matter. Here comes the enemy. You're in the foxhole, and you're running out of ammo. The guy jumps in, and he's got a whole box of ammo and his own weapon. And you turn to him, and you say, oh, thank goodness you're here. Oh, let's kill the Muslims. Yeah, okay. Are you a Christian? No. What are you? I'm an atheist. Oh, get out of my foxhole. Not going to happen, is it? Of course not. But I am queer. Oh, no! I'm a queer atheist. So anyway, Jason Torpy, a retired soldier, president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, said his group isn't opposed to Christianity or any other organized religion, which is the whole point. If someone is a secular humanist or an atheist, I don't mean somebody who hates religion like me. Most religion, most atheists or free thinkers or from the humanist society, they don't hate religion. They just see it for what it is. I happen to despise it. I am not a spokesperson for any non-religious group. I don't want to corrupt their message of free thought. But this organization, the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, they're not opposed. You know, if you want to believe, believe. Go ahead. Believe whatever you want to believe. Now, see, that's where the Freethinkers and I part company, because I know full well that if enough of these people believe whatever they want to believe, and what they want to believe is some craziness out of some religious text, then you have things like Prop 8 pass in California. That's just one small example. Or you have ideas like manifest destiny. God told us to go kill the Indians. And so on and so on and so on and so on. So I do not feel comfortable around religionists of any stripe. I just don't, because I know their history. But the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers don't think the way I do. They think, look, you know, we're not opposed to it. The spokesman, Jason Torpy, went on to say, quote, we just recognize that religion and religious people get a lot of support from the military. What about the rest of us? End quote. What about the rest of you? See, an atheist or a freethinker or a humanist or an agnostic, somebody I guess I'll leave out agnostics because they kind of sit on the fence. But the people who really have made a decision, you know, I'm here now, like Sally Field in the commercial for that bone medicine. She says, I have one body and one life. Right? Oh, man, I'm surprised that some religious group has not attacked that ad and her and the product because she said that. But freethinkers, in the context of what we're talking about, understand that. But if you only have one life and one body and four limbs and two eyes and one digestive system and a brain that's perfectly okay without half of it blown away, you're going to be less inclined, aren't you, to go kill for General Electric or Shell Oil or somebody. You're going to be more inclined to say no, hell no, because you understand that there's no 70 virgins waiting for you. Oh, wait, that's their religion. You understand that Jesus is not standing up there going, come home, my son, come home, kill first, and then come home. Here, go kill these, then kill those, and get those up there in the hills, and then come home. No. You don't buy that. So if you're a free thinker, it's a little bit more difficult to motivate you. You understand what I'm saying? You have to really lean on a free thinker with military tactics, with plans. You've got to say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and here's the reason. And if you approach a free thinker, someone whose brain is not corrupted with religious garbage, and say, look, we're out here to kill Muslims, for a very simple reason, they control the land where the oil is. We need the oil, so we've got to kill them. The religious freethinker, the non-religious person, is liable to say, oh, yeah, okay. So we're doing this in order to survive as a fading industrial power. Yes, that's right. Oh, okay. All right. Now, if I get shot, of course, I just, you know, blank out. That's it. Yes. Ah, okay. Now, I think I'll pass. I don't want to blank out. I'm only 22. I would like to live a few years. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not ready to strap suicide bombs on my body and run into some hotel in Tel Aviv or Mumbai or someplace or Ramallah and blow everything up. I'm just not ready to do that for some twisted concept of a creator. So I'll pass. Of course, we don't strap bombs to our bodies. We drop them out of airplanes and stuff. Back to Jason Torpy, the retired soldier, president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. He said his group has fielded hundreds of complaints from service members who believe they've been harassed, passed over for promotion, or forced into retirement for not following the religious preferences of their commanding officers. No, really? But that's how religion works. Believe how I believe. Well, I don't know. I'm not real convinced that how you believe is the right way to believe. Oh, but it is. Well, I still would like to check out some other things. No, no. Believe what I believe. Or what? Or your immortal soul will be condemned to hellfire for all eternity. That's what. Woo, not very good choice there, right? Right. That's how it works. The former Army First Lieutenant, who is with the Secular Coalition for America, said Equal Opportunity Office investigators in the service ignored his complaints about harassment and mistreatment because he was an atheist, which led in part to his decision to leave the service. Now, you see, he was a commissioned officer, so he can resign his commission and get the hell out. What about the E1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s? You know, what about those guys? They don't have a commission. They can't resign. They signed a contract. Well, so did the lieutenant, but different deal. Army Major Laurel Williams, currently stationed in Florida, said she has filed complaints about military conventions and programs that are little more than Christian rallies, but she's received little or no response. Now, according to Defense Department's own statistics, about one-fifth of current service members identify themselves as having no religious preference. One-fifth. What would that be? Quarter of a million? But only a small percentage of troops identify themselves as atheists. And Jason Torpy, the retired soldier, president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, says that's because they fear retribution. Without new rules, he said, there isn't any guarantee that they can avoid that kind of treatment. Jason Torpy, retired soldier, said, quote, we're as dedicated to the military as our Christian counterparts. We just want to serve our country, too. That's all. But you see, that's what gay folks say. Hey, we're just, you know, we're dedicated to the country, too. We just want to serve the country. Now, of course, the atheists and gay folk and non-gay folk and believers are not serving the country at all. But let's pretend that they are. That's the same argument you see gay folk. We just want to, you know, go kill the enemy, too. No, no. You're queer. You stay home. And you, you're an atheist. Go sit in the corner.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, the bad news out of Georgia tonight is that Jim Martin, the Democrat who was trying to unseat the cowardly rat bastard Saxby Chambliss, was defeated. Saxby Chambliss will serve another 6 years unless he dies of prostate cancer before his term is up. Representing, being one of two senators representing Georgia, two Republicans in the U.S. Senate. Chambliss, of course, is the guy who linked our former Secretary of State and former Senator Max Cleland, triple amputee from Vietnam, with Osama bin Laden back in the 2002 election. And Saxby Chambliss is the cowardly son of a bitch who, while our former Secretary of State, Max Cleland, was getting blown to pieces in Vietnam, Saxby Chambliss was hiding behind his wife's petticoat here in Georgia. I mean, it's just disgusting. Just disgusting. Saxby Chambliss is a freak. He's going to serve another 6 years, but that's Georgia, you see. This is Georgia. For those of us who choose to live here, it's like choosing to live someplace where it's really weird if you get into the realm of politics. And how do you not get into the realm of politics? I don't know. I referenced on my little mini blog today, and I have to admit, I'm just getting more and more sarcastic on that mini blog. And to all the dedicated Obama supporters, I do apologize. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and I did take a vow to declare a moratorium on being a smartass or nasty or critical of President-elect Obama's selections. And I'm trying. I still believe, and I mean this sincerely, I still believe that maybe, perhaps, he has a plan that just can't quite be revealed yet. He can't do what Clinton did. As soon as Clinton got in office, he tried to reform health care in this country and dropped the don't ask, don't tell rule or whatever he tried to do about gays in the military, and he was immediately crucified. And at that point, the plan was put into effect to send Monica Lewinsky onto Bill's radar, and Clinton, being the horn dog that can't keep his fly zipped, that he is and was, that spelled his doom. On the other hand, Barack Obama is, you know, seems to be very content in his marriage, and I don't think they're going to attempt that with Barack Obama. Whether he was content in his marriage or not, I think Obama now has the example of poor old... I can't say the things I really want to say on this program. I really wish I could. I really wish I could, but I can't. So anyway, my hope is that Obama has a grand plan and is keeping it under wraps, and putting people in positions of power in his administration that he feels he can control in order to satisfy the freaks who are lying in the bushes, like, you know, the really bad generals and admirals and people who, the war lovers. I got an email today, somebody said, well, Malloy, your blog is wrong. Really, you know, good generals or military people don't like war. Look, that may be true with certain combat veterans after they have experienced something like the Bataan Death March. But where it concerns advancing in the military, the only way you really can advance if you're an officer is to get involved in a war. Now, I don't mean to disillusion, because I realize there are exceptions to the rule. There are flag rank officers who truly believe that war should be the last resort. But, you know, if it's a matter of getting that third or even fourth star, stand back. Here I come. So I don't think there's anybody in the higher ranks of the military who don't appreciate a good war, because that's the only way they're going to advance. And especially one where it winds up as, General, what's his name? I talked about him last night. What he referred to as a turkey shoot. McCaffrey. General McCaffrey, what he referred to as a turkey shoot. If these flag rank generals and officers, I should say, can get into a war like that, where they can shoot and kill and destroy and blow up without being shot and killed and destroyed and blown up in return, well, hallelujah. Because once you get that combat zone ribbon, you've got that combat zone ribbon, period. It can't take it away. But I digress. In the little mini sarcastic mini blog I wrote yet again today, there was a reference to an article in the Washington Post from today, headlined "Nuclear or Biological Attack Called Likely." And I want to quote a little bit from that when we come back. We have to take is it time? No, it's not time for a break, is it? We got a minute. Okay. Joby Warwick, who wrote this for the Post, said the odds that terrorists will soon strike a major city with weapons of mass destruction are now better than even. That's according to a bipartisan, congressionally mandated task force. That's what they have concluded in a draft study that warns of growing threats from rogue states, nuclear smuggling networks, and the spread of atomic know-how in the developing world. Well, now, Barack Obama has said in the campaign that until he was crucified, you'll pardon the expression, that he would sit down with leaders of so-called rogue states, which I always find that term rather interesting, rogue states. He would sit down with leaders of countries that we disagree with and hold talks. And, of course, immediately the Ho from Wasilla and her sock puppet, John McCain, immediately started screaming about, oh, he's going to sit down and talk without preconditions. God damn, he's going to give away everything. Well, the only alternative to that is to nuke them. And I understand. I do realize there are a lot of people in this country who believe in the second option. You know, as long as it happens over there, not here. And what these idiots don't realize is there's no such thing as over there when you're dealing with nuclear weapons. What about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Mike? That was 60 years ago. Bombs have changed since then. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. We're talking about the article appeared in the Washington Post today, nuclear biological attack called Likely. The odds of terrorists will soon strike a major city with weapons of mass destruction are better than even. That's according to a congressionally mandated bipartisan task force. And they cite as the reason for their concern, rogue states, nuclear smuggling networks. And again, let me reiterate, during the campaign, Barack Obama said he would sit down and talk with the heads of states like Iran. I think that was one he used. Obliquely, he made reference to that, and immediately, you know, the right wing just peed all over itself. But that's got to be a better idea if the choices are respond like Bush does or don't. And as far as, you know, one all-out attack, which is what the right-wingers in this country want, this is what some rich pig like Limbaugh would love to see that because he can go into his well-appointed bomb shelter with the 13-year-old boys and girls that he has down there and be safe. You see, while the rest of the world turns radioactive. But for the people who think they can, and there still are a lot of people who think that, well, the nuclear war could be contained and survivable. Ah, God. Please don't think that, because you're putting my life in danger when you think that, and all my children and my grandkids. So stop thinking that, because there is no such thing as a manageable or winnable or rational or anything nuclear exchange. It doesn't exist. If India figures everything out and realizes that the government of Pakistan that we have totally destabilized and corrupted and undone, that the remnants of that government is directly responsible for the attack in Mumbai over the weekend, then the Indians are going to respond using the Bush doctrine of preemptive force only since these two countries are run by people who are religious fanatics, it'll be a nuclear exchange. Don't you think? You don't think so? Maybe not the first thrust. Anyway, the article in the Post says the sobering assessment of such threats singled out Pakistan as a grave concern because of its terrorist networks, its history of instability, its arsenal of several dozen nuclear warheads. The report. Now tell me if this doesn't remind you of the Project for New American Century when they handed a report like this to Bill Clinton back in 1998. But this is now, that's then. This is not Clinton, is it? This is Barack Obama. The report urged the incoming Obama administration to take, quote, decisive action, end quote, to reduce the likelihood of a devastating attack. Ooh. More change. The draft report, and it's entitled The Commission on the Prevention of Weapons of Mass Destruction, Proliferation, and Terrorism. That's the name of it. And by the way, it spent about 6 months preparing this assessment for Congress and the new president-elect. It says no mission could be timelier than taking decisive action to reduce the likelihood of a devastating attack on the country. And it adds, quote, in our judgment, America's margin of safety is shrinking, not growing, end quote. Well, time to break out the candy-color-coated terrorist alerts again, right? Huh? Read something in the past 4, 5, 6, 8 days that New York is once again a primary target? The subway system? I don't know. Something, right? Okay. If they say so. The report concludes that terrorists are more likely to obtain materials for a biological attack than to buy or steal nuclear weapons. But it's, how are we going to tell we've been hit by a biological attack? The Chinese continue to flood any country they can get their goddamn hands on with stuff that is polluted, corrupted, and dirty, and filthy, and contaminated. How are we going to know? What's this I read now that in France? What is it in France that has they've discovered feed that went to an organic farm in France that raises what? Organic chickens? I don't know. Free-range chickens? But the feed that came from China is contaminated with melamine, the same thing they feed their little babies over there in the commercial formula. Because the Chinese are all goddamn crazy. Every single Chinese person. Oh, here they come. Here come the emails! So how are we going to know we're under biological attack when everything we get is from China? Nothing is inspected because, A, we don't have the manpower, because, B, the Bush crime family was more interested in killing Muslims than examining the cargo containers that come into this country and what the hell is in them. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, Malloy, that's why the world recession is pretty good, because it's reducing the number of cargo containers. Down here at Savannah, Georgia, big major shipping port, all of a sudden, not as many of these things coming in from China. Well, okay, that makes them easier to inspect, right? Wrong. It just means that fewer are coming in. Nobody cares. Nobody, you know why. So, all this talk about a chemical, biological, nuclear attack, hello, how are we going to know? The Chinese are polluting the DNA. Does it get down that low? Maybe not. Maybe just the biological processes. Or they want to. Everybody on Earth, including their own people. Because they're crazy. This is the hangover from the Great Leap Forward and Mao and the crazy, insane crap that's gone on in that crazed country for so many eons, millennia, I don't know, build a wall, ooh. I don't like any society that produces people who puts poison in their toothpaste because the poison is cheaper than the fluoride. You know, sorry, it's just a bigoted part of me. Just something inside of me that says that country sucks, and so does its leadership, and so do its people. Sorry! Where was I? The report went on to say, without greater urgency and decisive action by the world community, it is more likely than not that a weapon of mass destruction will be used in a terror attack somewhere in the world by the end of 2013. Oh, God. What's that, November, December? They've got it down that fun. Let's see, 2013. What is this, 29? Oh, just in time for another election. Imagine that. The creation of the commission was one of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, which explored the causes of the 2001 terrorist attacks against the United States. Really? The new panel's bipartisan members and staff conducted more than 260 interviews with government officials and experts around the world to assess the problem of weapons of mass destruction, as well as offer proposals for reducing the threat. Yada, 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 yada. Now, this commission was headed by former Democratic Senator from Florida, Bob Graham. Bob Graham. Yeah, Christ. And former Congressman from Missouri, Republican James Talent. Well, you talk about a dynamic duo. There you go. The one of the conclusions from the panel is, quote, nuclear terrorism is still a preventable catastrophe, end quote. And it calls for aggressive steps to reduce unguarded stockpiles of nuclear weapons materials, such as uranium and plutonium, as well as coordinated international efforts to discover and disrupt smuggling rings that traffic in atomic technology. Who was the guy, Khan, who, the Pakistani who was selling nuclear technology to anyone who wanted a piece? Here, you want some nuclear technology? Give me the money. It also, the panel urges a dramatic overhaul of the international institutions and treaties that have sought to slow the spread of nuclear weapons since the 50s, including the landmark Non-Proliferation Treaty. More on that in a moment.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, now I'm getting some mild criticism here about my statements about China. One here says, regarding melamine, the United States, and I've said this in the program before, we export death by the carton with our cigarette exports, right? Probably half a million deaths just in the U.S. God only knows how many around the world. But I would take exception to hidden melamine in baby formula and being the equivalent of cigarettes. Anyone who smokes understands, I did for years, that I was risking my life, my health, and the lives and health of people around me. But I was enough of an addicted, egomaniacal jackass to continue to smoke. People who smoke cigarettes do have a choice. Yes, it is addiction. Yes, it is harder to break than heroin. But people can stop. When you are feeding your baby formula and you have no idea that you're feeding the baby poison, an industrial chemical, that's a little bit different. Or when you're brushing your teeth where did that happen? Haiti, Dominican Republic, right? You're brushing your teeth and all of a sudden your whole goddamn head falls off from the poisons in the toothpaste. That's a little bit different from smoking cigarettes, don't you think? Yeah, I understand. The United States is a huge net exporter of death. If we don't do it with our weapons, we do it with our cigarettes. I understand that. But at least we're right up front about it, aren't we? I mean, you don't buy a 50-millimeter cannon thinking, well, I'm going to use this to build a house.
You don't buy a carton of cigarettes thinking, well, I'm going to use this so I can run a mile in under 5 minutes. But you do occasionally fix your baby a bottle of formula thinking, I'm doing this so my baby will be healthy. Oops, she just died. There is a difference. Maybe only in semantics, but there is a difference. Now, nuclear terrorism. The report here that I've been quoting from also urges a dramatic overhaul of the treaties. International treaties. You remember treaties? The kind that George Bush uses as bathroom tissue? Treaties that have sought to slow the spread of nuclear weapons since the 50s, since the bad old days of the Cold War. And then, of course, there was the landmark Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Remember that? That was way back in the 60s. And it was designed specifically to calm things down between the United States and the Soviet Union because we were just arming anybody and everybody, and so were they. It was part of the great game. So the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was put into effect by who started it? Somebody in Ireland? Wasn't it the Irish? I think it was the Irish. But I do know this. Only four recognized sovereign states are not parties to the treaty. North Korea, India, Pakistan, and Israel. Now, two of those countries are right up front in the news reports, right? India and Pakistan. As far as Israel is concerned, we know Israel has. Israel has, 200, 300, 400 tactical nukes as well as strategic nukes. Okay, so what? But they haven't signed. North Korea, Pakistan, India, and Israel. Now, the United States, as soon as we signed it, we made sure that our NATO allies in Western Europe had nuclear weapons as many as they wanted. And some cynics might have said, oh, well, that was a violation of the treaty. No, because we continued to control them, or so we told the rest of the world. So anyway, blah, 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 that's history, and that's a long time ago. My God, that's 40 years ago. Who cares, right? Who cares? The article in the Post says the United States should push for a global consensus banning states such as Iran and North Korea from adding to their stockpiles of enriched uranium and plutonium, while also ensuring supplies of commercial reactor fuel for countries that renounce nuclear weapons, according to the report. Ooh, well, that's a great idea, huh? The reason there are so many unguarded nukes around the planet is because the only country that really had the available cash to guard them or decommission them was the United States. And we've had a series of presidents who said, no. We really don't care. Nuclear threat's over. Everybody go home. There's no nuclear threat. There has no nuclear threat since Ronald Reagan pulled the Berlin Wall down brick by brick, slab of concrete by slab of concrete. There's no nuclear threat. Everybody go home. It's all over. Which is arguably the most dangerous lie under which we all exist today. Right? A little bit more from this report, and then we're going to move on. I know reports are boring. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
You just a Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So the welcoming committee for Barack Obama is really got the red carpet out. Yes, indeed. The authors of this commission, that or I should say the chairpersons of this commission, the commission being put together to scare the hell out of all of us, that we are going to be attacked by some weapon of mass destruction before late 2013. It is going to happen as sure as God made little green apples. Oh, well, then we're all okay. Just an expression, you know what I mean. And so they're going to deliver this. No, it's Washington Post got a hold of the draft report. I wonder how they did that. They probably went to former Senator Bob Graham and said, can we have a copy? Yeah, here you go. Get it out there. Scare the bejesus out of everybody. Go ahead. So it's out there. The report is out there now. The report concludes that the U.S. should push for a global consensus banning states such as Iran and North Korea from adding to their stockpile of enriched uranium and plutonium. France, China, Israel. How about us? Should we be disallowed from adding to our... Oh, never mind. Anyway, the commission members also urged Barack Obama to take a tough line with both Iran and North Korea. What about with China, Brazil? Brazil's about to enter the nuclear club fairly quickly, which means Venezuela is not far behind. Take a tough line, tough line. How about with Israel? How about with Russia? How about with Kazakhstan? Doesn't Kazakhstan still have weapons, nuclear weapons? Belarus? All those guys, or did they return them to their Russian overlords? I don't even know anymore. And like I say, I really don't care because there is no nuclear threat anymore. It's all been taken care of. What the book about nuclear winter, Fate of the Earth, Jonathan Schell, that's all nonsense. It's all gone. Don't even worry about it. The article concludes that Pakistan's buildup of nuclear arms also threatens to exacerbate a regional arms race while presenting opportunities for terrorists to acquire weapons, parts, and critical technology, the commissioners concluded. And then they said, quote, Pakistan is our ally, but there is a grave danger. It could also be an unwilling source of a terrorist attack on the United States, possibly with weapons of mass destruction. Just substitute the word Saudi Arabia, or the two words, for the word Pakistan, and you have more of that history repeating itself. Well, I don't know about you, Truth Seeker, but that just scared the hell out of me, huh? How about you? Let's listen to a little bit of President Chucklenuts in his exit interview with Charlie Gibson of ABC, one of the crack news guys in the history of news guys in the United States, Charlie Gibson, who really defined himself when he got all upset during one of the debates between, who was it? Was it still during the primary season? When Charlie Gibson wanted to know, for real now, if Barack Obama was going to do anything about increasing the capital gains tax for, you know, average folks like Charlie Gibson who had an income of over $200,000 a year. Remember that? Well, what are you going to do about the capital gains tax? You know, and America's sitting there going, what in the name of God is this freak asking? Capital gains tax? Christ, Gibson! There are people out here losing their homes. There are two wars going on. You miserable, self-referential little twit, and you want to know about the capital gains tax for people like you and George Judas Stephanopoulos, right? God, I hate these people. Anyway... In the first of a series of exit interviews, the giggling killer sat down with Charlie. Charlie? Well, Charlie, I'll tell you what. The Bush Doctrine? Well, Charlie, what part of it? The giggling killer sat down with Charlie Gibson and waxed poetic about his ungodly tenure in the Oval Office. Gibson began, this is from yesterday, I believe, by asking Mensa Man about his disastrous economy. Charlie said,
Mr. President, let's start with the economy because it's what's on everybody's mind. Your successor will inherit not just a troubled economy, but an economy in crisis. Do you feel responsible for what is happening?
You know, I'm the president during this period of time, but I think when the history of this period is written, people will realize a lot of the decisions that were made on Wall Street took place over, you know, a decade or so before I arrived in president, during I arrived in president. I'm sorry it's happening, of course. Obviously, I don't like the idea of people losing jobs or being worried about their 401ks.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the American people got to know that we will safeguard the system. I mean, we're in.
We're in.
If we need to be in more, we will.
Oh, yeah, it's a goddamn poker game, isn't it? Chuckle nuts, huh? People got to understand decision made on Wall Street took place over a decade ago before I arrived in president, during I arrived in president. What is he saying? What do those words mean? Those are words in English. But they're not connected. Oh, don't at this late date, Malloy, just give it up. Next, Charlie asked if the last election was an indictment on his hideous 8 years. Of course, Gibson doesn't have the testicles to ask the question that way. Gibson said, I like this, Mr. President, and he looks over the top of his half glasses, right? You know how Charlie does. Charlie, Mr. President, was the election in any way a repudiation of the Bush administration?
I think it was a repudiation of Republicans. And I'm sure some people voted for Barack Obama because of me.
Oh, yeah?
I think most people voted for Barack Obama because they decided they wanted him to be in their living room for the next 4 years explaining policy. In other words, they made a conscious choice to put him in as president.
But both candidates wound up criticizing you a lot.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're the incumbent and during a tough economic time. But
Hurt?
No, not really. I mean, I've been around politics a long time. Remember, I was a guy in 2000 who campaigned for change.
Hurt?
I campaigned for change when I ran for governor of Texas. The only time I really didn't campaign for change is when I was running for re-election.
Yeah, you just stood up for more of the same. More global death and destruction, more rape of the middle class, more trampling of the working people, more profits and tax breaks for big corporations. Why change any of that? He thinks it was a repudiation of Republicans. But Charlie has the, what's the word I'm looking for? Can't think of it. Charlie has the blank to ask this murderous son of a bitch sitting across from him, Hurt? Because both candidates wound up criticizing Bush a lot. Hurt? Did it hurt? No, not really. You know, I've been around politics a long time. Did it hurt? Tell me where it hurt. Come on. Did it hurt? Where did it hurt you? Did it hurt your heart? Did it hurt your liver? Where'd it hurt? When you went to bed at night, did it hurt? You know, and Bush is sitting there looking at Charlie, thinking to himself, what in the hell is this guy talking about? Hurt? Hurt? You can ask the Tin Man. It was the Tin Man who was looking for a heart? Yeah. You can ask the Tin Man. You can't hurt unless you have a heart. Oh, never mind. So, let's have a little more romantic retrospection here from Raisin Brain. Charlie asked about what W. wasn't prepared for when he took office. I'd say sobriety, but, you know, he had a different answer. Charlie says, let's talk a little bit about 8 years as being president. What were you most, Jesus God, I'm going to throw up. What were you most unprepared for?
Well, I think I was unprepared for war. Campaign and said, please vote for me. I'll be able to handle an attack.
I don't think you were.
I didn't anticipate war. Presidents, one of the things about the modern presidency is that the unexpected will happen.
Let me write that down.
What don't the American people know about being president?
Oh,
what
Jesus.
Would surprise them the most?
I think people look at the White House and say, oh man, what a miserable experience it is to be president. You know, there's a lot of noise, a lot of criticism, a lot of name calling, a lot of this, a lot of that. There's some days we're not so happy, some days happy. Every day's been pretty joyous, though.
That's the second time I've heard
you use
the word joyful about the presidency, and that might take people by surprise, even in really tough times.
Oh, yeah. I don't want people to misconstrue. It's not, I don't feel joyful when somebody loses their life, nor do I feel joyful from somebody loses a job. That concerns me. And, you know, a president ends up you know, carrying a lot of people's grief in his soul. But the idea of being able to serve a nation you love has been joyful. In other words, my spirits have never been down. I have been sad, but the spirits are up.
You know, as a matter of fact, Charlie, I'm going to be upping a lot of spirits when I get back to Crawford. You know, Jim Beam, old granddad Jack Daniels, going to hang out with all my old homies. As far as feeling joyful or sad, are you out of your mind? I don't feel anything. Why? Because I'm a goddamn sociopath. This time.
Get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
So Charlie is doing an excellent exit interview with President Chucklenuts. I like this. The last clip we played for you where Charlie says, let's talk a little bit about 8 years of being president. What were you most unprepared for? And he says, well, I was unprepared for war. What he didn't add was, but I went ahead with the slaughter anyway, even though I was clueless. In other words, I didn't campaign and say, please vote for me, I'll be able to handle attack. Well, no, you didn't, you dumbass, because clearly you weren't. And I still believe you engineered it anyway, so, you know. Moving right along. Charlie, now this is from today. This is from today's segment of Charlie Gibson's little interview with the Chucklenuts, where the insightful Charlie Gibson asks the really important questions and really holds the son of a bitch to telling the truth. Because after all, Charlie Gibson is ABC's crack, anchor guy. So, Charlie asks George what George thought about the public opinion. And about him. About George, and Pickles weighs in on this one too. Charlie says, as you leave, looking over the tops of his glasses, as you leave, what do you think the country's feeling is about George W. Bush? That would be you.
I don't know. I hope they feel like this is a guy that came, didn't sell his soul for politics, and had to make some tough decisions, and did so in a principled way.
I think they think he's somebody that kept them safe for 8 years.
Oh, no.
And I hear that all the time. People thanking me, telling me to thank him.
The thing that's important for me is to get home and look in that mirror and say, I did not compromise my principles. I didn't. I made tough calls.
Yeah, you did. Most of them to Remy and Cheney asking, who do we bomb next? And where they hid my stash. But never mind. But Pickles sitting there saying, I think they think that that would be you and me. Where are they? He's somebody that kept them, that's us, safe. What? For 8 years. Well, he also kept a lot of us dead, Pickles. I don't get it. He was president during the worst terrorist attack in U.S. history.
largely because he either allowed it to happen or engineered its happening, or he ignored presidential daily briefings and many other warnings from not just what was left of our intelligence agency, because it was before it was totally turned into a pack of street whores, but from intelligence agencies all over the goddamn planet. We're warning him. Warning us. Oh, no. Never mind. So not only was he the sitting president during the worst terrorist attack in U.S. history, he got us into two bloody casualty-heavy wars as a result. But Pickles is proud of how he kept us safe? Jesus Christ, Pickles, get back on the sauce, baby. Leave the Valium or whatever the hell you're taking alone. Go back to drinking, all right? You got to. You're much easier to deal with when you're just a drunk, unless you run a stop sign and kill somebody. But God! But you see, this is an extra interview, so Charlie is going to sit there and just nod his punkin' head.
Yep, yep.
So Charlie follows up these tough calls and unwavering, about those tough calls and unwavering principles. Chuckle Nut still won't admit any mistakes, which is kind of remarkable. But then again, it's not. Charlie says, was there a time when you thought, if I do this, whatever this is, I will be compromising my principles?
Yeah. What? A pull out of Iraq. And compromise the principle that when you put kids into harm's way, you go in to win.
Yeah, goddamn.
I listen to a lot of voices, but ultimately I listen to this voice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let your son die in vain.
Oh.
I believe we can win, and we'll do what it takes to win in Iraq.
You've always said there's no do-overs as president, if you had one.
I don't know. The biggest regret of all the presidency has to have been the intelligence failure in Iraq.
Oh, God.
A lot of people put their reputations on the line and said, you know, the weapons of mass destruction is a reason to remove Saddam Hussein.
Getting harder to lie, isn't it? Huh?
People in my administration. And,
a lot of members of Congress, huh?
You know, that's not a do-over. I wish the intelligence had been different, I guess.
If the intelligence had been right, would there have been an Iraq war?
If he had had weapons of mass destruction, would there have been a war? Absolutely.
No, if you had known, he didn't.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's an interesting question. That is a do-over that I can't do. It's hard for me to speculate.
Charlie should be embarrassed. Charlie takes down his $900 trousers and bends over in front of George and Pickle sitting right there. Oh, my God! Charlie says, if the intelligence had been right, would there have been a war in Iraq? And Bush says, if he had weapons of mass destruction, would there have been a war? Gibson, no. If you had known, he didn't. Well, Charlie, let's see, Gibson. Charlie Gibson. That's English, right? What are you, an Anglican? Are you Episcopalian? You all believe in hell, right? Huh? Don't you? Well, Charlie, your ass has just been condemned to hell for all eternity, by the way. All eternity because of what you're doing. Just kidding. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Welcome back. Malloy program on Nova M Radio. We just filled your head with about half an hour of garbage. No, not this program. The quotes from Bush in one of his exit interviews with ABC's crack anchor guy, Charlie Gibson. Bush had been asked, and we just played it for you. Gibson said, let's talk a little bit about years being president. What were you most unprepared for? And Bush said, well, I think I was unprepared for war. Everything that comes out of George Bush's mouth is a lie. Sandy in Portland writes, when Bush says he wasn't ready for war, isn't that just another flat-out lie? Well, yes, it is, Sandy. Recall Mickey Herskowitz's biography of W., which quotes the weasel as saying prior to the 2000 election that if he had the chance to invade Iraq, he wasn't going to squander the, he referred to it as, opportunity like his father did. Also, the neocons from the Project for the New American Century swooped into Texas prior to and during that campaign, no doubt to prepare Bush for the eventual preemptive invasion and occupation of oil-rich nations, especially those in the Mideast. Sandy concludes by saying, it's times and people like these that I can only hope there's eternal hell and damnation, because for sure there's a special place for these pieces of human waste within that realm. Not only that, remember prior to the invasion of Afghanistan, the members of the Taliban made a trip to Houston to meet with, UNICAL and some insiders of the Bush crime family. And the reason the Taliban members were there is because they were summoned. They were told, look, we want to build a pipeline across Afghanistan. We got to get all that Caspian Sea oil and natural gas from places that are landlocked across Afghanistan to Pakistan, where there is a port. And in the book, what was the book written by the two French intelligence guys? Remember, we quoted this way back in, when was it? Jesus, Kathy. Prior to the invasion, I think it was in 02. Something Truths. Forbidden Truth, thank you. In that book, written by two French nationals, one a former French intelligence operative, the other a French journalist, the Taliban was told, the leadership of the Taliban was told, we can pave your streets with gold, I'm paraphrasing, or we can bomb you back to the Stone Age. Now the joke, of course, the people in Afghanistan pretty much live in the Stone Age, so to speak. I'm just kidding. But the Taliban, being the religious nutballs that they are, just like the religious nutballs that exist in Texas at this meeting, all these religious nutballs making decisions about who's going to die, who's going to live, what country's going to be invaded, how many Americans are going to die, how many Afghans are going to die, how many Iraqis are going to die, how many Palestinians are going to die, how many Syrians are going to die, how many Lebanese are going to die, and ultimately, of course, how many Israelis are going to die. All of these decisions being made about a goddamn pipeline. A pipeline. But you see, this is how it works. This is how it works. When you see the footage of the soldiers in Afghanistan today, why are they there? Do you ever ask yourself that? I do every day. Do you suppose Barack Obama, our soon-to-be president, asked himself that question? Do you suppose Robert Gates, the once and future Secretary of Defense, asked himself that question? Why are our people on patrol in Afghanistan, a country that decimated Alexander the Great, the British Empire, and the Soviet Union? Why are our people there? Well, it goes back to that meeting in Houston, Texas. We want to build a pipeline across your country. No. What? No. Oh, Jesus, you just signed your own death warrant. No. Now, before I play the last George Bush soundbite, Robert Perry, today, the lies continue. It's been in what's been called George Bush's first exit interview, Perry writes, the outgoing president continues a lie that he first unveiled several months after launching the Iraq War, justifying the invasion by claiming that Saddam Hussein didn't let the UN inspectors in. Remember that? Like previous times when Bush used this lie, it went unchallenged by the ABC News anchor, Charlie Gibson. According to the text of the ABC News interview, Gibson asked Bush, quote, if the U.S. intelligence had been right, would there have been an Iraq war? Bush answered, yes, because Saddam Hussein was unwilling to let the inspectors go in to determine whether or not the U.N. resolutions were being upheld. Of course, the record is clear. Hussein did let U.N. arms inspectors into Iraq in the fall of 2002 to search any site of their choosing. They traveled around Iraq in white vans. They were recorded daily by the international news media. They found no evidence that Iraq had WMDs, even at sites targeted by us. Go look here. Okay. There's nothing here. Okay, go look there. Okay, there's nothing there. Hussein and his government also declared publicly that they didn't possess these weapons, and they provided the UN a 12,000-page declaration on December 7, 2002, explaining how Iraq's stocks of chemical and biological weapons had been destroyed in the 1990s. Remember the 12,000-page document? And by the time the news media got a hold of it, something like 8,000 pages had been removed by the Bush crime family. But Bush, you see, he wasn't going to screw up the way his daddy did. That's what this whole thing was about. He said it himself. Given the opportunity to go to war in Iraq, or the need to, I'm not going to screw up like my pappy did. So Bush forced the UN inspectors to leave Iraq in March 2003. And within days, the shock and awe attack occurred on Iraq, beginning March 19th. Several months later, as Perry writes, with Hussein's government ousted, with the U.S. military coming up empty in its search for weapons caches, Bush began his historical revisionism by insisting publicly that he had no choice but to invade because Hussein had barred U.N. inspectors, which is a lie, on July 14th, 2003. Bush told reporters, quote, we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in, and therefore, after reasonable requests, we decided to remove him from power, end quote. Now, of course, he got no contradiction from the White House press corps. Not from those slimy bastards. Not then. Not tonight. No challenge. So Bush continued repeating the lie again and again. For example, January 27th, 2004. Bush said, quote, we went to the UN, of course, and got an overwhelming resolution, 1441, unanimous resolution, that said to Saddam, you must disclose and destroy your weapons programs, which obviously meant the world felt he had such programs. He chose defiance. It was his choice to make, and he did not let us in, end quote. An absolute lie. All of it. And the news media in this country, the filthy, hoard out pack of goddamn scum in this country that passes for news media. Just let this go. In the meantime, they were getting their martial music ready and their dynamite graphics. We're going to brand this war. God damn it, CNN's going to own it. No, Fox is going to own it. No, MSNBC. No, we're going to own it. No, we're going to own it. In his frequent repetition of this UN claim book, Bush never acknowledged the fact that Hussein did comply with 1441 by declaring accurately that he had disposed of his WMD stockpiles and by permitting UN inspectors to examine any site of their choosing. But prominent Washington journalists, what have they been doing? More in a minute.
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Twenty-one past the hour. We're talking about the exit interviews, the lies that continue, and the utter and absolute failure of every single mainstream journalist in this country to question the policies and the insanity and the sociopathology of these sons of bitches who have been in power for 8 years. This is the big crushing blow to me. Not that Republicans would attempt to do what these Republican bastards have attempted and damn near succeeded at doing, but because the so-called Fourth Estate, the only profession in America that is given constitutional protection, has failed. And not only have they failed, they become part of the problem. Nothing but absolute street whores, no offense to sex workers, where it concerns their duty, the press's duty, to challenge these liars. But no. And they still won't. Ted Koppel. Remember Ted Koppel? Nightline? Huh? Remember? America Held Hostage, day 362. Remember that? Way back in 1979, that's when Ted Koppel's career began. Ted Koppel, in a July 2004 interview, he used Bush's lie to explain why he, Koppel, thought the invasion of Iraq was justified. He said, quote, "It did not make logical sense that Saddam Hussein, whose armies had been defeated once before by the United States and the coalition, would be prepared to lose control over his country if all he had to do was say, 'All right, UN, come on in, check it out.'" End quote. He said that to Amy Goodman on Democracy Now. But in real history, in the truth, Hussein did tell the UN to come on in and check it out. But this twisted reality that these spinners, these doorkeepers, these liars, this swine that constitutes the National Press Corps in this country, all of this have become the trademarks of the Bush presidency and its supporters in the press corps. That's where we are. Perry goes on to say the Washington conventional wisdom eventually embraced another fake belief that Hussein provoked the war by misleading people into believing that he still possessed weapons of mass destruction. In line with this bogus version of history, 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley asked FBI interrogator George Pyro, who had debriefed Hussein in prison, why Hussein kept pretending he had weapons, even as U.S. troops massed on Iraq's borders, when a simple announcement that the weapons of mass destruction were gone would have prevented the war. Pelley said, quote, "For a man who drew America into two wars and countless military engagements, we never knew what Saddam Hussein was thinking," Pelley said. "Why did he choose war with the United States?" End quote. Now, the segment on 60 Minutes, of course, never mentioned the fact that Hussein and his government did disclose that it had eliminated its weapons of mass destruction. Instead, Scott Pelley pressed this former FBI interrogator, George Pyro, or Pyro, on the question of why Hussein supposedly was hiding that fact. Pelley said, "Why keep the secret? Why put your nation at risk? Why put your own life at risk to maintain the charade?" After Pyro mentioned that Hussein had a lingering fear of Iran, Pelley felt he was close to an answer to the mystery. Pelley went on to say, "He believed that he couldn't survive without the perception that he had weapons of mass destruction, right?" But still, Pelley puzzled over why Hussein's continued, why Hussein continued in his miscalculation. Pelley then asked, "As the U.S. marched toward war and we began massing troops on his border, why didn't he stop then? Why didn't he say, 'Look, I have no weapons of mass destruction'? I mean, how could he have wanted his country to be invaded?" You see, it never matters to the major U.S. news media like Scott Pelley or Ted Koppel or Charlie Gibson or to President Bush that Hussein and the Iraq government did declare that they had no weapons of mass destruction and did
let the UN inspectors in to check wherever they wanted to check. So in conclusion, as Perry points out with the ABC News interview with Chorley, it looks as if that pattern of Bush lying about the circumstances of the Iraq War and the Washington Press Corps nodding right along, that pattern will continue right through Bush's last days in office. This is the last chance that these crack veteran news guys have a chance to ask the guy who is still a sitting president, why did you lie? And they won't. And why won't they? Why won't they? Is it because they're cowards? Yeah. But they're not afraid of being renditioned. They're afraid of losing their jobs. Why? Because they work for corporate media news organizations. And what does that mean, Michael? Well, it means that every single one of them has a vested interest in not getting the truth, because that's what they're about. Six before the hour, actually 25. All right, saving the worst to last. This is the last little soundbite we have here from President Chucklenuts, his interview with Charlie Gibson. Who I wonder if Charlie Gibson is proud of himself. Does he feel that he make, what does he make, $10 million a year? Does he feel that he earns his money? He's on television every night, five nights a week for 22 minutes. And he is, along with every other White House or Washington or New York correspondent, anchor person, network news person, man or woman I can think of, with one or two or three glaring exceptions, you know who they are. But these guys, these women, are nothing but enablers for Bush. Do they? And these are smart people, right? You can tell by the I don't know, what can you tell by? I guess you can't tell by anything. But one makes the assumption that these are educated, intelligent people, and they sit across from Bush in these one-on-one interviews, or they spent 8 years hanging out in the White House press room, being hosed by members of the Bush crime family repeatedly in every single branch of government under Bush. How do these bastards live with themselves knowing that as the profession, the only profession that has constitutional protection, the right of a free press, they have failed miserably? How do they do it? How does Charlie Gibson look in the mirror and think to himself, boy, I scored a good coup there. I got to interview the president. Hot damn. I got the exit interview. Does Brian Williams makes about the same. So does Katie Couric, right? Do they look in the mirror in the morning when they're shaving or putting on their face or whatever the hell they do and pat themselves on the back and say, by God, I earned my $10 million this year? Jesus, God! So what was the highlight of the last 8 years for this miserable son of a bitch? Was it bringing democracy to the troubled people of Iraq or Afghanistan? Was it fighting AIDS in Africa? Was it making sure condoms didn't get into the wrong hands? That would be anybody's hands. Was it protecting all the snowflake test tube babies from the murderous scientists who want to conduct stem cell research? Was it No Child Left Behind? So what did George Bush say was the highest moment in his service to the American people? Charlie says, what was the high point of your 8 years?
I would say maybe the 2004 inauguration. Because, I had a difficult first-term presidency. Not such an easy one second-term either, by the way. But I had taken my message to the American people, campaigned hard, and then in a race that, frankly, I wasn't expected to win, won, and then was able to go in front of the American people again, thank them for their confidence, and start a second term.
Oh, my God. There is something about looking into the abyss, right? There is something about toxic narcissism that is so toxic and narcissistic. There's something about listening to an absolute sociopath that beyond the clinical aspect is fascinating, because you realize you're listening to someone who has no sense of morality one way or the other. They're amoral. This is, Bush never was a Hitler. He's amoral. There's no there. There's no ethical center. There's no conscience. There's no sense of right or wrong. There's nothing. Nothing. Forget the fact that he stole two elections. Leaving everything aside, his arrogance is jaw-dropping. The thing he felt best about was his second inauguration. Jesus Christ. And Gibson sits there with that dung-eating half-smile on his face, looking over the tops of his half-specs. That was it, Mr. President? Well, listen, Mr. President and Mrs. President, thank you very much for the interview. I really appreciate it. You two have just been a slice of heaven. You really have. Thank you very much.
Sure, Charlie.
So here we are. Now, somebody wrote me an email tonight and said, look, it ain't over till it's over. Terrorist attack? Is that what the Washington Post is talking about now? Is in reporting on the this bipartisan commission report, terrorist attack, it's coming. Certainly by the end of 2013, it's coming. It's going to be here. And one of my extreme cynics wrote to me and said, well, what about Inauguration Day in Washington, D.C.? How many people are going to be there? A million? 2 million? 3 million? How about some sort of a biological attack then? Then what happens? So, are you feeling as discombobulated or disjointed as your humble and obedient servant here? It's been astonishing. Now, I know, I'm talking about the past 8 years, actually the past 10, because I was still in Chicago working at ABC when the announcement was made that Bush was going to run for president. Jesus Christ! Oh my God, the Bush! I feel like You ever had a dog for a pet? You know those cloth bones you can give a dog? You know, the middle section is real wound, real tight cloth and two shaggy ends. And the dog would just get hold of that thing if he's a certain kind of breed and just worry it to death. Just shake it and play with it. That's how I feel. Do you feel that way? Like you've just been absolutely shaken back and forth endlessly by this crime family. And now look where we are. Look out the window. Look in your checkbook. Look at your 401k. Look at your job prospects. Listen, that noise you hear off in the distance, God only knows what it is. Maybe it's some sort of a terrorist attack coming. But look what the son of a bitch has done to this country. Look at it. Look at it. Look what his policies have resulted in. Think back, regardless of what you think of Clinton. Yeah, he's a schmuck. Look what he handed Bush. And look what Bush is handing Obama. It's just incredible. So what do we do now? Chucklenuts, being the sociopath that he is, he's just skating above it all. Like, hey, man, I'm going back, cut some brush. I'm sure my buddies in private industry, I've been so goddamn good to them for the past 8 years. Now they're going to be good to me. Me and Laura, we're going to buy a house over in Dallas or Houston maybe even. You know, I'm going to move back into oil business or something. I'm going to make me a lot of money now. Yeah, I'm president. I was president. Son bitch, I was president. I was president of the United States twice. I won two elections. I got political capital. They didn't like me at the very end, but what the heck? Nobody likes you when you're an incumbent. They got to get elected and what are we going to do? What are we supposed to do? How much of a struggle do you think is ahead of us in this country? All of us. My job depends on advertising. What happens if all of a sudden there's no advertising dollars? What does your job depend on? I think about the people who make cars. The people that work for the UAW, they're not the ones that decide the design or the gas mileage or the price. They just go to work. What's going to happen to them? And it's not just the auto industry. You know what I'm talking about. The destruction this man and his crew have brought to this country is, I don't know how you calculate it. I don't know where you begin. I don't know where you start. Where do you start writing down the column of numbers just if you want to assess the monetary damage? What if you want to assess the damage done in terms of death and destabilized planet and screwed up international relations? And what is this I hear? Condoleezza Rice is on her way to India? For what?
Another day, there's murder in the air. Text me when I want, I smell it everywhere. Just another day, where people cling to light. They drive away the fear that comes with every night.
Oh, my. Well, 10 before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and handled your phone calls, more or less. Sorry about that tonight. I just didn't get around to taking any calls, did I, Kathy? Gosh, what a crappy way to do a talk radio program, huh?
Well, you've got tomorrow.
That's true. Also, thanks to Ben Birch, our technical advisor and podcast manager, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, our ethical advisors, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, and our economic advisor, Bruce Enberg. The executive producer is Catherine Day. Yeah, I'll be here tomorrow night. Thursday night we'll be doing the show, or I'll be doing the show from Green 960, our affiliate in San Francisco. And then Friday night there is a bash to which I've been invited, and with a bunch of listeners to the program. So we're looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. When Randy did this, she came back and got fired.
Well, that's not exactly true.
I'm just kidding. I mean, I think, Air America just didn't want to continue to pay her.
Or anybody.
Or anybody, for
ever.
That matter. Yeah, right.
So historically.
So it was a good...
Going back years.
It's a good...
We have proof.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
We have documents and subpoenas and witnesses.
Yes, we do. God, I hate Air America. Anyway, from Prairie 2, regarding the report put together by the bipartisan Congressional Committee and leaked to the Washington Post, Mike, the threat of weapons of mass destruction report is largely pointless hyperbole. The only really valid point the report makes is that Bush has done absolutely nothing to make us safer, and has in fact made us much less safe. While it's true advancing technology does make bioweaponry slightly easier to produce, scientific advances also make it much easier to detect that sort of activity. Of course, you have to actually use those scientific advances, so we're sent screaming back to their one valid point. As far as assigning a date or a percentage of likelihood without knowing what the threat is or who to suspect, bat squeeze. Or who to suspect, bat squeeze. To put this non-specific threat in perspective compared to the accumulation of bad policies that have been put in place in the last 28 years, like lack of health care that doesn't work, pharmaceuticals that don't work, or outright kill, workplace dangers, crumbling highways, increasing hunger, malnutrition, pollution, and on, these things are killing enough Americans every year to empty a not-so-small city. If you're willing to ignore that, then worrying about the remote threat of a successful weapons of mass destruction attack in the next 5 years is kind of silly. How many cities have we lost in the last 8 years? But things are looking up for the United States, at least in the opinion of some people in India. A popular new political slogan in India today is, "Not all terrorists come by boat, some come by ballot." America got rid of theirs, why don't we? If we can just survive the next 2 months. From Bruce, Prairie 2. The two stories I didn't get to tonight that we will get to tomorrow is the damage the Bush administration is doing quietly to torpedo global warming regulations and just about every regulatory process in this country. You know, this filthy, lying son of a bitch said he was going to cooperate, make the transition easy. No, he's not. Everything Bush says or has said or will say is an entire, complete lie. This is a sociopathic, evil man. And then, there is the story out there. I'm sure you've seen the ads. The Employee Free Choice Act. There's a business-backed group called the Employee Freedom Action Committee, which was active in several contested Senate races this year. And they're trying to convince us that unions are to blame for the big three American automaker problems. Unions. Huh? That's according to a television ad meant to stoke public opposition to organize labor's number one legislative priority. And the ad, I don't know if you've seen it, but the ad says, "Steel, auto, airlines, what do these industries all have in common? Hundreds of thousands of lost jobs and union bosses that help put them out of business." And the ad urges people to fight the Employee Free Choice Act, which unions hope will be taken up quickly by the Democratic Congress and Barack Obama. This is a bill that would eliminate the requirement for workers to cast secret ballots in deciding whether to organize. all they have to do is fill out a card. And a union organizer can come in and say, here's a card, just check the box that says, yes, I want to join a union, or no, I don't want to join a union. Well, obviously, the people, the business interests who want to destroy collective bargaining are against this. So they're painting it as though a potential union member just checking a box is somehow contravening his own freedom. I mean, everything that's up is down, everything that's right is left, and everything that's black is white. It's just insane. You're worried about, or you think about, after reading 1984 for the 900th time, are you worried about newspeak? You're worried about the corruption of language? Look no further than the efforts over the years, but especially now, to destroy once and for all the union movement in this country. We'll cover it tomorrow night. Oh, not cover it. That sounds so arrogant. We'll talk about it tomorrow night. All right? Thanks for hanging out. I do appreciate your participation tonight. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.